Radio Free Readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Welcome to the Voice of the American Readout. Thank you for tuning in to the John Jacob Schmidt Show, where my name is your name too. If you're a God-fearing, liberty-loving patriot, it is finally summertime has arrived in the American Readout. Welcome to all of you across the fruited plains and in the American Readout, Wenatchee, Tri-Cities, Yakima, Spokane, Moses Lake, wherever you are tuning in. Really appreciate you guys being out there and really appreciate you guys outside the wire in occupied territory looking for truth, looking for encouragement on the live streaming audience, in the live streaming audience. Thank you guys for being with us. Now, we've got a special treat for you. We got a guest coming up. You've heard of her. You guys know her. You're big fans. You listen to her once, at least once a week on Radio Free Readout on Sunday afternoons, right? Chris Ann Hall, patriot, powerhouse, historian, constitutional attorney, will be joining us in segment two. So we've got that to look forward to. Tons of stuff we're going to be getting into there. Thank you guys for your prayers and your support, your encouragement. It means so much. Keep them coming, please. Now, I want to make sure there's plenty of room to bring Chris Ann on, so let's get right into the news and commentary brought to you by Glenn Tate and the 299 Days book series. It is time from APUPI and the major American networks, the news right here on Radio Free Readout. Let's go across the seas here. Cultural diversity collides with intolerance in Afghanistan, of all places, where they have their own version of Sesame Street. Introducing Zari, the first Afghan Muppet. Now, the six-year-old girl is the first ever Afghan Muppet who is aimed at promoting female empowerment in Afghanistan. Made the debut this week. Now, this is great because the multiculturalists that are trying to empower women over in Afghanistan, I don't know if they realize this, but first of all, according to the Taliban, any likeness or an image of any living thing, especially people, is taboo. And a woman, a girl, being empowered, that's just a great way. That's just not very good situational awareness. That's going to get some people hurt. They think that they've got whatever standard in New York just should apply to everyone, whether you're in Afghanistan or wherever. But all right, let's move on. That jumped out at me. Here's something that is really important to you guys. Remember, I've been talking about get encryption, get it now, get it while you can. Because it's not going to be that much longer before you cannot. Well, I wasn't kidding. This next article, Senate bill, has been drafted, which would prohibit unbreakable encryption. A draft version of a Senate bill would effectively prohibit unbreakable encryption and require companies to help the government access data on a computer or mobile device with a warrant. They've already argued they don't need a warrant because it's, you know, national security. There's a reason for them to be able to spy on you. The draft is being finalized by the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Senator Richard Burr, Republican, North Carolina, and the top Democrat, Senator Dianne Feinstein of California. Now, a Senate bill with Senator Dianne Feinstein from California being involved, with anything having to do with what's necessary for your safety, it's just nothing good can come out of it. Now remember what I said. Get encryption now. Get encryption capabilities. We talk about this on Radio Free Redoubt. We talk about this over on Partisan Radio podcasts. And you might be one of these people that says, why would I need encryption? I don't understand. I don't have anything to hide. If you're not doing anything wrong, why should you care? I don't have anything to hide, so I don't care what they look at. Well, you might not have anything to hide because you might not even just be effective at all. You're no threat to them. But we've talked about this before, and it's happening all across the world where non-state sanctioned churches, the members are being arrested. They're being rounded up. They're looking for lists of names. Now, that might be something you might want to hide, right? To keep other people in your underground church from getting arrested, tortured, raped, abused, murdered, imprisoned. But some people just don't get it yet, that if you don't have something to hide today, tomorrow you might. And right now, the encryption capabilities are there for you to get it now. They definitely want access to all of that stuff. Now, the FBI just came out and warned of a cyber threat to the electric grid. I don't know if you guys have heard of this or not. Now, we've talked about this before, but there was just a recent report released. This DHS, Department of Homeland Security, you know, the ever-efficient organization, just released an intelligence report downplaying the cyber threat to the power grid. So what should that be? What should be going on inside your head? 3 months after the Department of Homeland Security intelligence report downplayed the threat of a cyber attack against the U.S. electric grid, DHS and the FBI began a nationwide program warning of the dangers faced by the utilities from damaging cyber attacks like the recent hacking against Ukraine's power grid by the Russians. This is coming at you from the Free Beacon, not Free Bacon, freebeacon.com. The unclassified briefings are titled Ukraine Cyber Attack Implications for U.S. Stakeholders. I'm really beginning to not like that word. The government always uses stakeholders. That's a whole nother lesson. Words, the way words are used. And are based on work with the Ukraine government in the aftermath of December 23rd cyber attack against the Ukraine power infrastructure. These events represent one of the first known physical impacts to critical infrastructure, which resulted from the cyber attacks. What they're saying is this: the tools that they used to carry out the cyber attack could also be used against infrastructure in every sector. In other words, communications, cellular telephones, all of these. And they're downplaying it to say, this is really no threat. We think what this is probably actually is just cyber espionage. The report said that cyber attackers such as nation states like Russia and China are mainly seeking to conduct cyber espionage. Spying? Spying to see how we run our power grid so they can run theirs more efficiently? Does anybody buy into that? Well, there's reports that's contradicting what the DHS is saying when they downplay this threat. The report raises questions about whether DHS, which has primary responsibility to blah, 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 blah. Let me move on. A recent statement by Admiral Mike Rogers, commander of the Cyber Command, who warned recently that a major cyber attack by nation states against critical infrastructures poses a major security threat. Now, who do you believe? The DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, the ever-efficient, constitutional-abiding organization that's always looking out for your safety? Or do you believe an admiral, a commander of the Cyber Command, warning us that nation states who are carrying out major cyber attacks are a serious threat to us? I'm going to err on the side of treating it like it's something worth paying attention to, which means you need to be self-reliant in case the power grid is not available so you can continue to function, live, communicate, operate as much as you can. There's another article here speaking of the federal government and their wonderful ways. One of the Bundy women, the wife of Mel Bundy, was interviewed along with all the other women. And there are reports coming out and there are investigations that are going to be coming from this. Claims that her husband was held after he was arrested for holding for taking pictures of the cattle. This is from back in the Bundy Ranch. For almost 2 days, he was held, forced to sit in a room with no bathroom, covered in his own urine, feces, and vomit during the time Mel Bundy was offered a slice of stale bread to sustain him. When they finally did bring him a meal on the third day, he was forced to eat it on the floor like a dog. You cannot get away with treating proven, known terrorists this way. And this is the way we're treating American citizens who are supposed to be presumed innocent until they are found guilty in a court of law, being shackled to a wall, sitting in his own excrement. This is preposterous. And there are some legislators, some leaders, grassroots leaders, that are working very hard behind the scenes to start this. It's not going to stay behind the scenes. They're going to make their voices known, but they're getting their ducks in a row right now. And there are some congressmen and women that are getting involved in this. We can't stand for this. Unacceptable. Anyway, when we come back, Chris Ann Hall from Liberty First. This is the Voice of the American Redoubt. Don't go away. We got it going on, 300 million strong. Stop the bombs, love riot in the street, cause smile for the camera, bro, you're in America.
The world is caught in an era of socialist expansion. Most of the nations are affected. And America is a target. In fact, the number one target of both the socialist and the communist. If we permit our great system to crumble through the apathy of our citizenship, we shall lose not only our freedom, but our prosperity and our still brighter future.
We are an exceptional country. Our religion, and I will say it, is exceptional. That's what made us great. So don't be afraid to talk about it, because that's what it means to be an American. The world is looking to us for leadership, not President Obama, us. The people in Ukraine aren't looking to the federal government. They're looking to all these local governments for leadership, and it's going to come from us.
You're listening to Radio Free Redoubt, the voice of the American Redoubt.
Welcome back to the voice of the American Redoubt. Got a special treat for you coming up. This segment, segment two, is brought to you by Werks Holsters, WERKZ.com, an American Redoubt based company making custom Kydex holsters and magazine carriers. Check them out at Werks.com today for your custom holster needs. The coupon code RFR for your discount on your next purchase. All right, now it is an honor, and I told you guys this was coming, but a very special guest, Chris Ann Hall. Many in this audience, your guys, your regular listeners. We air her podcast every Sunday afternoon at Radio Free Redoubt. And a lot of you have been to her events wherever she's spoken. Chris Ann Hall, as you know, is an attorney and a former prosecutor. And she was fired after teaching the Constitution to Tea Party groups. So she doesn't compromise. She's also a disabled veteran from the U.S. Army and a Russian linguist, a mother, pastor's wife, and so many other things. But she is an educator of American patriots, taking us way back to our roots, getting into the history of the history before the history of our country. So, Chris Ann, it is an honor to have you here with us at Radio Free Redoubt. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, it is my pleasure. I am very happy to be here. Thank you.
There's several things that I wanted to bring you on for to talk about. First of all, the attacks that anyone who is effective in the Patriot movement right now is under fierce attack, coordinated and calculated attacks from the left. from multiple different angles. We'll talk about that. And hopefully you can offer some encouragement to those patriots out there that are watching this unfold before them to keep the faith. Because it is very interesting how I've seen this time and time again with Pastor Sharam, with Representative Matt Shea, who's an attorney, with you, with so many others. You see these guest articles taking place or you know, reading them in the newspapers or seeing it on the news. And it's always from the left. They bring someone to weigh in on the situation, and it's usually a professor and a scholar and what they call a subject matter expert. But whenever anyone comes to argue on behalf of liberty and our American heritage, they're not a subject matter expert. They're a guest speaker. Or if they're qualified, then they'll throw in self-described. You know, then when they just wouldn't let us say that they're a self-described professor. But and then finally, what I really wanted to talk to you about is the supremacy clause. Mm-hmm. And this is super important because this is the lie that they're using, even patriots who don't know better, to accept this government supremacism. And so we want to break through that. And I'm looking forward to that very much. So first of all, just for our new listeners, what have you been up to lately? I mean, what is it that you do, your mission right now, your calling in life?
Well, I travel around and the country and I teach the Constitution. I teach the history of the Constitution. I teach its proper application, the application that our framers intended for us to use, the only application that's actually legally correct, as the Constitution is a contract, and contract law determines the application of a contract, and contract law dictates that it is the drafters of the contract who determine the meaning of the contract, not the people who want to apply the contract at a later time. And so what I do is I take those basic truths and principles of contract law and teach the Constitution the way it's supposed to be taught and show people how to apply the Constitution the way it's supposed to be applied, making sure that we understand that there's nothing new, nothing novel, and nothing invented in our Constitution at all, that our framers took every aspect of our Declaration of Independence, our Constitution, and our Bill of Rights from over 700 years of history. There are five documents that created our Constitution throughout the British history, documents that even Alexander Hamilton referred to in Federalist 84 as being the backbone to our Constitution, and even implying that they assumed that these five documents would be a part of the understanding of our Constitution. And so I teach that. So I teach the history. I teach First Amendment issues. I teach Second Amendment, Fourth Amendment. I teach about the sovereignty of the states and the proper power delegated to the federal government and those powers reserved to the states. There's just so many things that we teach incorrectly and have been for generations. And we need to return back to these historical truths and this proper teaching if we're ever going to get the government back in order. And so I teach high school, middle school students. I teach college students. I teach adult groups. I teach churches about religious liberty. I teach state legislators and law enforcement. I have taught legislators in Arizona, Utah, Missouri, Idaho, Kansas, Washington State, and Oregon.
You're all over the place. I've been watching. Of course, I follow it, and this is what is so impactful, is you are educating the electorate as well as the lawmakers, the guardrails of the Constitution to stay within. And this is what's this. You addressed this week. Some supposed self-described professor out of, where was this? Susan Smith, Willamette University, which was, it was funny that you pointed out, She's an expert from a college rated 132nd out of 144 law schools, mm-hmm. way down there at the bottom. But mm-hmm. she's a self-described expert. But mm-hmm. she claims that you adhere to textualism. In other words, you can only interpret the Constitution only the text within the Constitution.
Right. And it's called the four corners of the document. It means that she is claiming that my interpretation of the Constitution is based on the words on the page alone and nothing beyond
nothing beyond the text.
Dictionary. Yeah, the dictionary definition of the words on the page.
Well, I can attest that this is absolutely she disqualified herself in my mind right at that statement because yeah. I've seen you speak twice. I've listened to multiple podcasts and read your work. I've never seen anyone teach our heritage and our history like you do. You take the words, the text of the Constitution, and then you go deep. Then you say, now let's talk about where this came from and what mm-hmm. influenced these guys to put these words down on paper in our Constitution. I've never seen it pulled apart except, I don't know, maybe wall builders. There's very, very few people out there that teach, and I've never heard anybody teach on the level that you do from a constitutional attorney or lawyer perspective. So, these are just pure attacks. There's no other explanation for it.
Well, when you look at Susan Smith's credentials, she's an environmentalist.
Yes.
She's an environmentalist with a law degree. And it's ironic that she writes books about the limited power of the federal government, but only when it comes to protecting swamps and salmon and trees and lizards, you know. And so what she has done is put the animals and the plants over the inalienable rights of the people, saying that these deserve protection by the federal government over the government's designed purpose of protecting the rights of the people.
Yes.
And again, it's like you said, the first thing that she said, that I use textualism to interpret the Constitution, discredits the entire rest of her argument.
Yes.
It doesn't help, though, that she claims that she's an original intent interpreter of the Constitution.
I know.
And then she runs immediately to the Supreme Court rather than through the framers themselves.
That's what I wanted to point out. This is so for the listeners, when you see patriots being attacked, it almost starts to have an effect on you, but stop. There's mm-hmm. always two sides to these people. They're like two-faced monsters. Okay, mm-hmm. so she starts out by maligning you by saying that you only look at just the text and without taking into account. And the second part to that is, without taking into account how the Constitution has been authoritatively interpreted by federal courts over the past mm-hmm. two centuries. And
right.
as we've seen, especially in this trend of godlessness, we are seeing a departure from the original intent to mm-hmm. this new, I don't even know what to call it, dichotomy, this new, the whims of society of today is the lens that they're using to interpret the Constitution.
Well, the lens they're using is what I call a judicial supremacy.
Yes.
And so what we have taught now is that courts issue rulings and make law. Well, that's not true. Number one, courts don't issue rulings. They issue opinions. And obviously, the term ruling is applicable in a court of law as it is controlling over the courts. But as we apply it in context today, we actually turn it into like a king's ruling, meaning you cannot question it.
Yes.
And then they determine that courts make law. For example, I know that you have heard people say, well, after all, Roe v. Wade is the law of the land.
You're right.
Okay, but there is no federal law
no.
on the definition of life. And courts cannot make law. Courts making law in claiming that a court opinion is law is a clear and a violation of separation of powers.
Yes.
Because lawmaking capability is reserved to the legislative branch. So if the judicial branch is stealing from the legislative branch, that makes their actions immediately discredited. You cannot have a branch of government stealing power from another branch and then having it legal.
Well, here's one to make you feel like you're living in Alice in Wonderland. The people in the state of Idaho passed a constitutional amendment defining marriage as between a man and a woman. A federal judge comes along and deems that constitutional amendment unconstitutional. The mm-hmm. governor turns around and says, well, that's the law. So mm-hmm. now we're going to overturn the Constitution of Idaho based on an opinion, but being perceived even by people like the governor as now that's now the law. And that's how far we've come. But we have come to the end of the time for this segment. But we'll be back in a minute. If you'd be willing to stay with us, we'd love to talk to you more about that, the Supremacy Clause, which is what all this is rolling into. So this is we are with Chris Ann Hall, constitutional attorney, fellow patriot, God-fearing patriot, who's doing so much for the cause. It's just an honor to have her with us. We'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to The Voice of the American Redoubt.
Being a patriot isn't easy. It takes work. And I see too many conservatives, even patriotic people, taking our remaining liberty for granted. Most are happy to just float along enjoying freedom. Freedoms that were hard won and fought for by others at great sacrifice. But most conservative Americans do little or nothing to keep what's left. We often hear people say we need to take back America. But if we can't even hold the line and don't stop losing ground, how can we expect to ever take anything back? Thomas Paine said, "Those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it." He didn't say undergoing the fatigue of supporting it was a great idea. And he didn't say maybe we should. He said, "We must." But maybe we've come to a point where even patriotic citizens don't want to do anything that might fatigue them. If that doesn't change soon, well, one day we'll be saying, "Remember freedom? Wasn't it nice?" I'm Violette Sabo, with points to ponder, words to live by, and ideals which define us.
Hey everyone, this is Glenn Tate. You're listening to Radio Free Redoubt and John Jacob Schmidt. His name is my name too.
All right, before we went into the break, you guys got a little taste of a major powerhouse attorney and patriot, Chris Ann Hall, talking about some of the challenges that we face, some of the lies that we face. And we are going to spend the rest of our time talking about this and a couple of other issues as well. We might get into the Oregon situation a little bit. That's kind of what spawned some of these recent articles and attacks. Chris Ann, thank you once again for being with us at the Voice of the American Redoubt.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I love teaching this stuff, you know, because it's like you said, even people who consider themselves to be conservatives have been brainwashed into such a level that we don't even recognize what we're saying and doing.
No question about it. And I've been in front of you at least twice, I think three times. But the folks that are in the listening audience, at least listening on the radio right now, all over Tri-Cities, Yakima, Wenatchee, Spokane, if you want to get a chance to listen to Chris Ann Hall in person, you will not be bored. People do not fall asleep when she's teaching. They are on the edge of their seats. But you have an opportunity to go and see her Thursday and Friday, April 21st and 22nd. In Prosser, Washington. She's also going to be speaking in Yakima. She's going to be over on the west side in occupied territory. But you can go to her full schedule at chrisannhall.com. We'll remind you of that before we get off the air and give you all the details about where you can go to learn more. And we're working on some scheduling to get you further deeper into the American Redoubt in the Spokane and Coeur d'Alene, North Idaho areas. Is that correct?
Yeah, no, I love coming there because we have great, great crowds there. We always have several hundred people that show up, and everybody's full of energy, and it is always a really great place for me to teach.
Yeah, well, it's always an honor to have you. It's a great time, and people never get tired of it. They go and they tell their friends, "Oh man, you got to see this gal." And they'll bring three or four friends with them. So it's
well, we teach so much, and we're not only teaching things. We're tearing down bad foundations and rebuilding. And so, in just an hour's time, I always tell people it's sort of like drinking from a fire hose.
Yes.
And there's so much information that it's not unusual for me to see the same people come to the same lesson two or three times because they're like, I couldn't get it all the first time.
Yeah.
And it's amazing because there are always people who come with pen and paper because they want to take notes. And make no mistake, it is enjoyable and it is fun, but it is learning. And there's so much to learn. And I'm so honored by the fact that people come and learn from the framers in this way. Because in reality, I don't really consider myself a teacher as much as I consider myself a facilitator of the lessons that our framers wanted us to know.
Yeah, you're dead on, and you do it so well. You've written several books. I'm actually reading right now Sovereign Duty. Amazing.
Thank you.
I
love that book. That is so dear and near to my heart. I just love that book.
Yeah, there's one requirement that, well, I was going to say you could supply with the book, but they can provide it their own, is a highlighter. there's so much material. I'm like, I'll highlight a quote or some historical statement or some poignant portion of that, and then there's another one, and then there's another one. And
well, you know, that's why the book is formatted the way it is. It's formatted with wide spaces between the lines and wide margins, and I do that on purpose because when I read a book, I don't just simply read the book. I write, I take notes, and I use my book as a study book. And I wanted other people to be able to do that as well. So that's why the book is written the way it is, so that it can be a study tool. The whole in Sovereign Duty, what I love about Sovereign Duty is the whole back of the book is citations. So every quote and every document that I reference within the book is cited back to its original source text, so that you can have access to the full textual information that I use to write the book. And that way, you know, you don't have to worry about these errant liberal professors like Susan Smith trying to discredit what you say, because you're not basing your statements on opinions by the Supreme Court invented by people who had no relevance to the Constitution whatsoever. You're basing it on the very texts written by the men who wrote the document themselves.
Very true. I've seen that, and I did notice that. It is such a historical and intellectual case that's laid out that you actually become, I do anyway, I become angry. The further I go, the more I realize how much of our heritage has been robbed from us and how calculated it is, how strategic it is. And they cannot offer that. All they can offer, their case is not intellectual. It is emotionally charged, emotionally
right.
Driven. This is what I see when I look at, I like to look at the comments online when you see an article attacking you or any other patriot. What I see is these people I can't stand that Chris Ann's gotta go. She's mm-hmm. making these arguments for example, state land issues, right? State versus mm-hmm. federal land ownership. The courts have never ruled on this. She has, you know, no argument. And that's when it occurs to me, these people are completely slaves to the opinions of the courts. They don't even read, they don't even know what the Constitution says when you get into forts and ports, for example, mm-hmm. as far as what the federal government can own. So anyway, I don't need
well,
to,
we've
I want to hear you talk.
Well, we've become a society of people led by academia, who believes in a judicial supremacy. And what we have done is we've transmuted ourselves from a constitutional republic to an oligarchy of nine kings and queens. And that's how we operate, or at least that's how this segment of the population operates, the Susan Smiths and those who believe in this federal rule by court.
Yeah.
And there's nothing could be further from the truth, from the foundation of who we are. And it's like we talked before the break, the Supremacy Clause dictates the supremacy of the Constitution and places the federal government under the Constitution. I mean, not just the executive, not just the legislative, but the entire government, all three branches under the Supremacy Clause. It says, this Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, and anything in the Constitution or the laws of any state to be the contrary notwithstanding. See, most federal supremacists stop reading. Or they simply don't read this properly. You have to be grammatically illiterate to think that that clause puts the laws made by the federal government above the states.
That's where I wanted to go with this. See, because this is what we're being lied. This is how the citizens are being lied to, and I wanted to completely expose this. The reason why is because there's two issues. There's the homosexual marriage issue, and then federal court rulings upsetting the Constitution of Idaho. And they bring on a self-described professor who is a subject matter expert who responds to the arguments against this federal court ruling using the Supremacy Clause argument. Mm-hmm. The same thing with firearms. 30-round magazine, this debate started to unfold in the newspapers, and this professor came in to set everybody straight that if the federal government bans 30-round magazines, that would be a nationwide sweeping law that nobody could be exempt from because of the Supremacy Clause. The federal government's laws supersede all other laws. They have supremacy. So let's put that in its proper context and expose that lie for what
it is. Well, you know, it really is my favorite one. I love it when they use that one, because what that tells us is that they have never actually read the Supremacy Clause themselves, or they're grammatically illiterate. And I think that one of the deliberate dumbing downs of our education these days is the fact that we do not use grammar properly. We don't teach it properly anymore. I'm sure when you were in school, as when I was in school, we had to diagram sentences, right?
Yeah.
Everybody hated diagramming sentences. But the interesting thing is that diagramming sentences helps us, is invaluable in understanding what is going on with our language. How do we interpret things?
Yeah.
And so when they tell you that the Supremacy Clause makes the federal government superior to the states in all cases whatsoever, that's what they're telling you.
Right.
It means they don't understand this. So what we're going to do is, I hope that everybody is able to have a pocket constitution in front of them, because looking at this is very simple, but we're going to look at it piece by piece. It'd be easier if you had it in front of you. So Article 6, Clause 2, the Supremacy Clause, says, this Constitution, comma, and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, semicolon, and all treaties made, or which shall be made, comma, under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land. So what we need to realize here is that there are two independent clauses here. This Constitution shall be the supreme law of the land. That is a proper statement when looking at the grammar of this sentence. The secondary clause is the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties or which shall be made under their authority of the United States shall be the supreme law of the land. Now, when we state these as two separate sentences, it's easier to see the real defining difference here. The Constitution is the supreme law of the land, period. Nothing else has to happen. It is the Constitution, therefore it is the supreme law of the land. However, the laws made by the federal government, the treaties made by the federal government, are limited to those designated as the authority of the United States, right? The enumerated powers. And they are only the supreme law of the land when they are made, as the clause says, in pursuance to the Constitution. So we've created a hierarchy here. The Constitution is the supreme law of the land with nothing else, no qualification having to happen. But any law, any treaty, any action by the federal government, in order to be a supreme law of the land, must be consistent with the Constitution, which means laws are underneath, the federal government is underneath the Constitution.
Yes.
You cannot make laws equal footing with the Constitution. That is a paradox. Because then all that has to happen is that the government creates one law that is not made in pursuance to the Constitution, and then laws are superior to the Constitution itself. And if the federal government is superior to the Constitution, then they have broken free from the constraints that created it. You have the creation becoming superior to the creator, and then you have not a constitutional republic, but an oligarchy at best. And that's not who we are.
That's certainly where they're trying to take us. And this is I had to dig it out. I had a panic moment. I didn't think I had my pocket constitution, but I do. I have it right here in my hand. And this is just such good stuff to get back to, because there is this mentality that's been built in, that's been sold to us ever so slowly over you know, decades, that the federal government is supreme, and the federal government is no longer today subject to the states. It's the other way around.
Right. Well, because we don't teach what the Constitution is. We don't teach how it's formed. We don't even know what a state is anymore. And that's part of that's the whole purpose of the Sovereign Duty book, is to reestablish these ABC 1-2-3 foundational principles as to who we are, so we know how we're supposed to act and who we're supposed to be. I mean, when I teach this class on the constitutional role and duty of the state and local legislators, one of the very first questions I ask is, which came first, the states or the federal government? So which one?
The states?
Well, obviously. I mean, that's a no-brainer.
Right.
But if we really knew that, I mean, just didn't simply repeat it, but knew that, we would know already, right then and there, from just that simple fact, from natural law, from the laws of primacy, who has more power than the other. The fact that the states came before the federal government shows that they were established in a superior power to the federal government.
Well, see,
and then you have to remember that the states created the federal government by creating the Constitution. The Constitution is not an agreement between the people and the federal government, because the Constitution was not ratified by popular vote. The Constitution was created by the states on behalf of the people. They were representing the people as the states.
Yeah.
It is the states that ratified the Constitution creating the federal government, which means the states are the creators of the federal government. You can't have it is a violation of natural law to have the creation become superior to the creator.
Well, it's true, but at this point in time, the states like Oregon and Nevada, recent examples that we've seen, are not acting like a sovereign state. It's almost like the allegory of the elephant attached to a pole by a string, and it can't get past the mentality that string cannot hold him. But in his mind, it can. So, well, I just go along with it. And well, we've actually gone beyond that now that we've turned our states over willingly, enslaved to the federal government. A lot of this is from, you know, federal funding and you know, other coercive measures, that tools that we've given the federal government to hold states especially states that I guess are inverted economically, they get more money from the federal government than they put in. And those guys are just owned. Idaho's mm-hmm. one of them.
Well, you know, it's interesting as we go back to the trolls that attack this teaching, and they say, like you said, there's no court that has ever believed, no scholar that's ever believed what you teach.
Right.
And it's interesting because that's not even true.
It's not.
Because Chief Justice Roberts of the current Supreme Court, in his majority opinion in the first Obamacare opinion, you know, the one that he said it's a tax, not a penalty.
Right.
Actually teaches exactly what we just talked about. He says, and I'm quoting him now, "We look to the states to defend their prerogatives by adopting the simple expedient of not yielding to federal blandishments when they do not want to embrace federal policies as their own." That's a Supreme Court opinion. A chief justice saying, we look to the states to defend the power that has been reserved to them and to refuse to comply with federal mandates and dictates and laws when they don't want to embrace them as their own. And then he says this, and I'm quoting him again directly, quote, "The states are separate and independent sovereigns, and sometimes they have to act like it," end quote. Hey, there it is, right there. You can't look me in the face and tell me that the Supreme Court isn't does not understand the sovereignty of the states when you're looking at it from this opinion from the Chief Justice of a modern court. You cannot tell me that the Supreme Court does not recognize the superiority of the states and that it interprets the Supremacy Clause to mean that the states must comply with everything the federal government says, because the Chief Justice just put that in the back seat.
The Chief Justice essentially just turned to tell the states to start acting like grown-ups.
That's right. That's right. Stop acting like colonies is what he's saying.
Yeah.
We are not a federal kingdom. Stop acting like colonies who must crawl and beg and plead to the federal kingdom every time they want to do something and must obey every whim of the federal sovereign. Start acting like the sovereign governments that you were created to be. Mm. And I think he was just crying out to the states, your people deserve better than this.
I absolutely agree. And, you know, these self-described professors and subject matter experts just vehemently attacked those statements mm-hmm. by the Chief Justice. So we have basically we're at a crossroads here in our country where we have people that now just simply, they don't care what our history is. They just don't want it to be like that anymore. They just mm-hmm. want communism. I mean, right. We even had our own president in South America telling people between a republic or, you know, versus communism, you pick what works. And we're in trouble at this point. So we have a deeply divided country where even – and this is what we're battling. We need to have the patriots get deep into their roots again, into our American heritage, and understand it so they can't be lied to, so they understand what a counterfeit is. And then we also have the other side that doesn't care what our heritage is. They don't care what the Constitution says. They just want it to be like this over here. They want it to be different now. They want to intentionally abandon that American heritage. And this is the true fight that we're in right now. Mm-hmm. It's beyond people just being deceived and not understanding their heritage. We have people who even do understand it and hate it and are attacking it.
Yes, well, because they have never relinquished that kingdom mentality. See, the problem is human nature dictates that people like free stuff. And what we don't realize is that for every service the government provides, we sink deeper and deeper into servitude. And some people like that. Some people like the luxury of no accountability, because it'll always be the government's fault, because you didn't build that. You didn't create that. It's not your idea, your building. If something happens, you can blame somebody else for that. But accountability and liberty go hand in hand. And with liberty, people have to self self-govern. And too many people don't want to do that anymore. Too many people would rather be slaves.
Yeah, there's no responsibility there. It's much easier for a lot of people. How many times have we seen that where people did not want to leave prison, where they were offered, you know, I've read several historical accounts about survival and
It's called being institutionalized. And
right.
The American people in great swaths across America have become institutionalized to the federal institution, that they are happy with the crumbs and the scraps that are thrown to them and the, you know, let them eat cake mentality of our federal government. And they're pretty satisfied with the 12 square feet that they can get from the federal government, and
yes,
don't realize that soon the 12 square feet will be four. Because when the government tells you where you can live and how you can live, then they can also take away what they've given.
Well, this reminds me of a situation in, I think it was a Poland concentration camp. They were planning an escape, and it was somebody's biography somewhere. But anyway, they had arguments from within the group. About a third of them said, I'm not going to be part of this. Look, they're feeding us. It's not, you know, the best lifestyle, but we're taken care of. We escape and run out into those woods. We will not have, food. We won't have clothing, shelter. We'll be on our own. And this is just where we are. And it's sad.
Yes. Yes, it is very sad. But education is what we do. And mm-hmm. we educate so that we can liberate.
Yes.
And the problem is that Americans have not felt like a healthy body for so long that we don't know how to be free. And once we experience freedom again, once we experience what liberty feels like, it's like a heroin addict becoming clean and knowing what a healthy body feels like. They never want to go back to that again.
Amen. Wow. Okay, well, okay, this is, we're coming up on the end of our time already, but please, if you would, take the time to, you've got a weekly, a daily podcast, almost daily with a few exceptions, website, Facebook, all that. Please tell the listeners where they can go and learn more about this.
Okay, well, you can learn more about all of my books, my videos. I have a YouTube channel. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I have articles that you can read. I have the radio shows. I have a television show. And you can see all of those things on my website at chrisannhall.com. And that's chrisannhall.com. And my radio show is carried all over the country, all over the world, actually. You go on Podomatic, right? So my show is also carried on Radio Free Readout. So we're pretty proud of that. I have 51 people in Ghana, South Africa that listen to me, or Ghana, West Africa, that listen to me every single day.
Wow.
51 people in West Africa. Why? Because we teach about liberty.
Yes. These principles apply anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
This is what inspires people all around the country. This is what inspired the people in southern Sudan. In fact, America, it will be the Hungarians, they have a Christian constitution as of 2012. European Union hates them for it.
Mm-hmm.
But they wanted these principles. They had their own, of course, heritage, Christian heritage. Now they were actually arguing for Christian socialism, believe it or not, when they went through their revolution, in the 50s. But it's these principles they're timeless, and people are hungry for them all over the world. So that really doesn't surprise me. Good job. Okay. Well, keep up the great work. God bless you and all you set your hand to. And I just want to thank you so much for being with us at Radio Free Readout. We'll do it again, and we're looking forward to seeing you in person.
Anytime. And I'm looking forward to being back in Washington and Oregon. We're going to have a great time. My family's going to be with me. My husband's going to be teaching lessons in Washington, and he's a better speaker than I am. So I'm very excited about that.
I've actually seen him speak on YouTube. Excellent. Excellent. Had me jumping up and down in my chair.
Wait till you see him in person. It's even better.
Nice. Okay. You have a great one. God bless. And God we'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Okay, before we wrap up, there is something I want to direct your attention to, something that I think is worthy of our support. In this day and age, in the last couple of weeks, I have begun a dialogue with a young gal who attends Washington State University, Vancouver. And she has expressed some incredible frustrations being conservative, which is actually right-wing extremist in the point of view of many of the faculty and students, where they're heavily outnumbered. But she sometimes co-hosts with someone who goes by DJ Rich on a show that is aired on the university's radio station, and it is ran by mostly students. They can put in their name in the hat, they can get their own show, and they have their own show. Every Friday morning from 7:30 a.m. to 9 a.m., he has a show called The American, The American. And you can go over to Koug Radio with a K, KOUGradio.com, and look at their radio programming. We'll post that in the highlights and resources posting. But it has been an uphill battle and a fight with the faculty, the staff, what they've had to do, the hoops that they've made them jump through, because they talk about issues like concealed carry, like the homosexual agenda being rammed down everybody's throats. They talk about social issues, and they do not toe the line of the left-wing narrative. And they've taken a lot of heat for it. So I just wanted to point that to you. I started listening to these guys. I think these young minds, these college students that are a voice of reason, they need our support. Go check them out, KoogRadio.com. Check us out tomorrow night, RadioFreeRedoubt.com, for our weekly podcast. God bless.